Hi there. Welcome back to the Change Manifesto podcast, Women Leaders in Change series. This podcast is about empowering individuals and teams to liberate themselves from change resistance and effortlessly ignite change, both in work and in life. I'm Molly Angel of Angel Change Management. This episode is the fifth installment of our Women Leaders and Entrepreneurs series. Each week this season, we've talked to a different professional woman about her story of change. In this episode, we'll be talking to Emily Carrion, VP of Marketing at DevOps startup Esper, and something of an upstart expert. She's known in the Seattle scene as a six-time technology startup veteran. But before we get into Emily's startup story, I want to take a quick moment to let you know about a five-day change management course now available to all of our listeners. Week to Change is a CM email series designed to deliver you accessible lessons, stories, and change management tools straight to your inbox. These lessons are easily digestible and designed to be used right away to improve projects, collaborations, and pretty much everything. The series will teach you how not to just talk about change, but actually implement it today using TRIZ, a liberating structure method, and other actionable CM tools as a guide. Designed for professionals new to change management, as well as the experienced CMs looking to refine their CM craft, the course is totally free and definitely worthwhile, if I do say so myself. Interested? You can sign up at weektochange.com. That's weektochange.com. The theme of today's episode is the importance of having a healthy change capacity, and specifically, how a higher capacity for change groomed Emily for a career as a serial tech startup executive, where change is not only inevitable, it's essential to your survival.
Change is constant at small companies or you're going to die. You literally have to pivot. It's like learn, experiment, and pivot. It's kind of like what we have to do because you have a smaller team, you have less resources, and you're going after a big challenge that you're trying to fix or a big problem you're trying to solve for the world. And I guess I'm just naturally drawn to that because I'm a very curious human and I get bored. Yeah, so I'm drawn to that. I thrive in that fast pace of change. At Point Inside, I was literally employee number one. So as you can imagine, I did every job you can possibly imagine, from hiring big teams to build the map. I mean, literally anything, because that's just what you do when you're that small. And then when our CMO left, our chief marketing officer left, the CEO was like, oh, well, Emily, you have a MBA. Why don't you like take on marketing? I'm like, okay. Because that's kind of like, in general, my attitude is like, we got a problem. Like, let's go fix it. We have a challenge or opportunity. Like, let's take it on.
That was Emily describing the quintessential startup experience, which requires you to switch between wearing all the hats you have stashed away in your skills tool bag on any given day. And it's this capacity for change that Emily credits not only with her own success, but with the success of the many startups vying for the top spots in the technology trend scene.
I would say the capacity to change and speed. Those are our only real advantages, right? Like, we don't have the resources to compete with the big companies, but we should be able to move faster, read signal faster, try things faster. And I think those are the ones that make it.
To hear Emily's story, you think she was groomed for a career in startups. She herself comes from an industrious entrepreneurial family. Her father was the chief of staff heading up the ER at one of the biggest hospitals in Bellevue, Washington, a fast-growing and influential suburb in Seattle. Her mother had an even more interesting and storied career that catapulted her from dental hygienist who dreamed of teaching to MBA and community college professor to a seat on the Bellevue City Council and then later mayorship, and even later than that, working in the Small Business Administration.
They always joke that my mom knew half the city with their clothes on and he knew half the city with their clothes off.
It was watching her mom work in the public sector that allowed Emily to meet all sorts of interesting people and witness change being enacted in her community in real time. Her mother, she said, had an insatiable curiosity to find out how things worked, where the problems originated, and figure out how to fix them.
It'd just be fascinating. We get to watch her every Monday night on the council and then hear my dad and her debrief of how were they able to get this person on board with this decision or not, or, you know, how to think about different things for the region.
Her parents never ceased to find an opportunity to tackle a new and unusual problem, despite both having very demanding jobs.
They were startup founders. I think when I was 3 or 4, they created a software company to digitize medical records. So like the entrepreneurial part is also in the family, which is pretty fun.
As mayor, Emily's mother played a large part in bringing Seattle's burgeoning light rail system to fruition, a program which was surprisingly controversial at the time.
My mom is incredibly good at collaboration. The city didn't want it going through their neighborhoods, and she helped everyone see the greater good and why this is not just about an individual neighborhood, it's about the community and how do we compete with other cities, global cities.
But the greatest gift Emily's mother ever gave her, however, came in the form of a confidence-boosting exercise she organized right after Emily graduated from college.
Like a lot of liberal arts is like you learn everything and nothing in terms of like what to do next for your career. So I had no idea what I wanted to do next. So she set up 10 informational interviews for me of people in all different industries. And she was like, just go talk to these people. So I had to come up with the interview. I had to like get comfortable meeting them. I was in 10 different offices. And really quickly, I figured out 6 things I absolutely wanted nothing to do with and 4 that were kind of interesting.
So at the ripe young age of 22, and thanks to her mother's vast network and skilled parenting, Emily discovered what she didn't want to pursue.
Banking, lawyer. There was one and like government. Like a lot of the stuff that kind of felt kind of too slow or changes took too long.
This experience allowed Emily to hone her interviewing skills, build up her confidence, and narrow down her interests. And on the very last interview, she got a lead that would turn into her first post-college job at the Pacific Institute, a role she would later describe as crazy a job a 22-year-old could have. And it would never have happened were it not for the informational interviews experience her mom set up for her.
I'm kind of like a watcher. Like I really, especially as a kid, I would watch how people would do things and then I would do it. I wasn't kind of the one that would do it first. But my mom always gave me kind of opportunities to try new things. And then when I picked something, like I'd go all in. She had ways to stretch me. And then over time, my confidence, you know, in college and after has really grown.
She was even more impressed by her mom's ability to hone and cultivate her early skills when she had kids of her own. And before we get too deep into Emily's story, I want to take a moment and point out that in addition to being a 6-time startup veteran, Emily is also a mother of 2. And when we recorded her initial interview, you can hear her nursing her then 7-week-old son on the tape, all while simultaneously recounting her favorite change stories. And like almost every parent on the planet, Emily says motherhood has changed her and the way she experiences change.
The biggest thing when I had my son, my first baby, immediately my priorities shifted. I've been that like high achiever, gold star, like check the boxes. And having a kid, and this is kind of tied to also my like leadership journey and like being an executive on the leadership team at our company is, there are a million things you can do in any given day, right? And it's like, I have this quote on my board that's, what's the highest and best use of my time? What can I uniquely do? What can only I do? And it's not usually the easiest thing, and it doesn't depend on volume.
Today, in her role as VP of Marketing at Esper, Emily spends most of her time focused on clear communication, something she says is absolutely critical to effective change management.
I spend most of my time determining the vision and strategy and then communicating the vision and strategy over and over and over. And then helping my team remove blockers. As the organization grows, one of the most challenging things is making sure everyone knows what's going on and feels empowered to both influence that and make it better. It's very tricky because you don't want to slow things down by adding like tons of meetings and you know, always getting to consensus. But I find that communication is one of the biggest challenges, is just making sure people feel heard and that decisions that impact their part of the world are considered.
Those of us seasoned CMs know these concepts are change management bread and butter. Success in this type of work requires a higher tolerance and capacity for change, something Emily is now quite practiced at.
Marketing is constantly changing. Whatever I'm doing now isn't going to work in 6 months just because of how, you know, behavior changes and channels change. So I love that. I'm always working on what am I doing now? And then how can I set myself up to be ready for the next shift? So what experiments am I running now to figure out what's going to work next? Every decision has a bunch of ripple effects.
So now that we have some juicy tidbits of backstory, let's bring Emily into the conversation. Hi, Emily. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Molly.
How are you doing today?
It is a beautiful day in Seattle. I'm doing really well.
Excellent. So let me ask you our first question today. How did your mom's 10 informational interviews lead into your crazy job at the Pacific Institute? And what exactly was crazy about it?
My mom gave me a huge gift when I graduated from college. I graduated with a liberal arts degree and knew all about everything and nothing. And so she introduced me to 10 people with the most different background she could possibly find. So government official, Boeing, public affairs, a lawyer, a banker, like you name it, kind of the breadth of this. And the gift was that in 10 conversations, I, number one, had to show up at an office, figure out how to talk to people that were very senior in their careers and get to ask them, like, what did they love about what they were doing and what did they not? And very quickly, I found some professions that were absolutely not for me. Love you, lawyers, but that's not going to be a place that I thrive in. And it also gave me the confidence of I can come in and have this conversation despite being 22. And what I did after those conversations is I had spent the previous year writing a thesis about education in Guatemala, and specifically why 40% of first graders didn't go on to second grade, and kind of unpacking that and what were some thoughts or some models other places in the world were using to help kids progress in their education. And there was a company in Seattle called the Pacific Institute that was literally working with the World Bank and the Minister of Education in Guatemala. That's how I found out about this in the first place. And, you know, my mom was like, well, why don't you just reach out and share your research with them? So I did. They took the meeting. I shared kind of what I'd learned and how I'd been inspired by the work that they were doing. And they offered me a job. They said, well, what are you doing this summer? I'm like, I'm looking for a job. And they're like, well, do you want to intern here? And it literally is like the dream place. And I got to help them build the Latin America division from scratch and literally work in Guatemala on this project. So when you say like, what was crazy about it? 22-year-old is putting on teacher training for 900 teachers and across Guatemala, obviously not alone, but living the dream of like, I had done a lot of research and thought here and saw the passion of the people. And I got to meet the Minister of Education and hand her my thesis, kind of this unreal series of events.
And it all started with a series of interviews. Very nice. So after a couple of years on the job, you decided to go back and get your MBA, and it was there that you fell into entrepreneurship, despite not having a Mark Zuckerberg idea of your own, as you put it. How did your MBA program pave the way for the startup career that followed?
So something about me is I am a collector of mentors, and I am a sponge for learning. So in my MBA, one of the first things I did was, who's here? Who's amazing? How can I learn from their vast experience? And it was a mentor of mine who I was helping him with one of his projects. And he was like, hey, have you ever considered the business plan competition? And I was thinking going into corporate social responsibility, like entrepreneurship was not on my radar. But he said, why don't you give this a try? And I, like you said, I was like, I don't have a Mark Zuckerberg idea. Being an entrepreneur was not as sexy. And what he said was, you don't have to have an idea. You can partner with entrepreneurs. And I thought that sounded really fun. And I, so he said, this is the way that you actually get to apply everything you're learning in your MBA. And it was the best thing I did. I got to partner with serial entrepreneurs. They were extremely smart. One was literally a rocket scientist. And what I helped them do was translate this very technical product into something that normal people speak, I say. And while we were the indoor navigation engine using, you know, all these fancy technical words, I was like, oh, so we're like the Google Maps or the indoors before Google did this. And not only did we go through the competition, but that was how we raised our first angel round and then our A round. And just, I literally was the first employee at this company, grew it to 90 employees. I hired personally probably half the company. I did kind of a little bit of everything. And from there, I was completely hooked because the level of autonomy and the excitement and knowing that what I'm doing today is impacting the direction of the ship and all of these people, that was super intoxicating to me. And I've kind of loved that level of autonomy and I've loved that ever since.
So this was an amazing incubator, this MBA program. So we should talk about where it was because I too have a personal connection to this program. So tell us a little bit about where you were and what the program was like.
Seattle U is really special. Part of how I picked it is there's really an emphasis on social justice and how do we make the world better and, you know, in a profitable way. We're still business students. But this business plan competition was amazing. So I say that being a student is the best time to work on a startup because everyone will take your cold intro. You just say, hey, I'm a student. I'm doing this thing. And everyone will be like, oh, how can I help you? And so when I said earlier that I collect mentors, I mean, I have top VCs in the city, serial entrepreneurs, CEOs who've been CEOs 9 times, I'd be able to go and say, hey, I need help with my financial statement. Who's the best person? They'd be like, oh, you got to talk to him. Or, oh, you got to talk to her. I don't know how to do this. They'd be like, great, talk to them. And literally I'd get this crash course of the best on the ground. Oh, I've tried that before. You actually want to do this. Or just that, that deep knowledge of the hearing stories in the trenches and anything from like the mindset of a CEO to what's EBITDA to what's an angel investor, how to think about all these different, it was literally like a brain explosion of all these different things we had to learn. And literally people that we pitched became some of our first investors. So, I mean, that's such a gift to get to take everything you're learning in the classroom, combine it with the smartest people in Seattle. I'm biased, but I think so. And then get to actually do it. I had to get on stage in front of hundreds of people and give the pitch. And I got to then give it in angel groups, right? So it was just this, again, it's kind of like thrown off the deep end and like swim, but we'll throw you a bunch of life preservers. You can get there faster. It was amazing experience.
Yeah, as I say, I have a personal connection. My younger son is a graduate of that same program and is an entrepreneur and has started his own business and had a very similar experience to you where it was this great combination of pushing you out into the world, giving you every opportunity to succeed, but really making it very easy for you to take all of those steps. So yeah, I can't say enough about Seattle U's program myself.
You have quite the entrepreneurial family, Molly.
Yes, we do. We all own our own businesses, and it's like our family business is having businesses.
I love it. I love it. What a legacy.
So at your last two executive roles, you went through the interview process and were hired while pregnant, an experience you describe as a really good tell to see if founders or leadership teams actually believe in taking care of people, or they just say they believe in taking care of people. How important is having a healthy company culture to the viability of a startup's success? And what lessons about building a healthy culture have you gleaned from the various leadership roles where you have had a hand in shaping it?
Yeah, there's a lot in this question, but it's really interesting because in tech and women's roles in tech companies has been evolving and getting a seat at the table, and it's shifting. The culture is shifting where we're no longer kind of the one person in the boardroom, hopefully, or the one person on the executive team. For me, being pregnant was a great time to interview as an executive to find the right company for me. I obviously am coming from a place of privilege when I say this. Not everyone, this is a really nuanced one, Molly, because it's like, I do want to recognize the privilege that I have, because not everyone will have the same end result. And mm-hmm. I'm very aware of that. So mm-hmm. I want to mm-hmm. be careful in how I kind of frame this.
I think it's fair game, though, to talk about your own personal experience being, you know, your lived truth. It really was what happened to you both times. So that, you know, what you're holding it up as like an example of a good indicator of company culture. It's not that you're saying that, you know, it could have gone either way, right? And it just, the dice fell in your favor because the culture that the company was already invested in yeah. was already there. You're the beneficiary of the fact that they'd already worked on a really great culture, but it gave you the insight into why that was so important at a very extremely personal level.
Yeah. So something that's really interesting is a lot of people were telling me that being pregnant is the worst time to find a job. And I have talked to many women who specifically don't change jobs while they're pregnant, and then to a certain extent to after. And my experience is that actually being pregnant was the perfect moment to be finding my next thing. And the reason is it made it really obvious. People couldn't just play lip service if families were actually important to the culture. And I actually got my first CMO role while pregnant. And the moment I talked to Francis, and, you know, I went through a lot of the interview process first, and then, you know, hey, what's your family leave policy look like? And she was like, well, we don't have it yet, but it's really important to me that from the top, we set an example that we care about people. And what better way than to take care of all of our executives? She's like, I know you're going to be just as good as an executive if you're pregnant or you're not. So this is like, you'll be a role model for our company and I need you, period. And then the second time around, literally I'm interviewing on Zoom. So nobody knows, right? And I don't have to bring it up, but I intentionally chose to bring it up because I wanted to see if people really walk the walk. And I work with two incredible founders. One of them had their two-year-old on the interview with me. So clearly all about family and, you know, juggling both. And then the other, the moment I said, hey, what's family leave policy? Because I'm pregnant. He said, congratulations. I'm really excited for you. And like, that should be the obvious response. But when I told a few of the other companies I'm interviewing with, it was like this backtrack, this how long would we have with you? Like this kind of like operating out of a place of fear versus, hey, if we want you, we want you, we want all of you. And it just said so much about the values of the founders and a place that I wanted to be and I wanted to help grow. So yes, I created the family leave policy and together with the founding team, and we did create a very generous, wonderful policy that now is for all of our families. And I was going to be a recruiting tool. When I tell people who are interviewing at Esper my story, they're like, whoa, I mean, there's the, what more evidence do you need that mm-hmm. this is a good place? So now it's this strong tool we have to say, hey, we actually want you to see your family. That's important to us. And culture and startups, we ask a lot of people, right? Like we don't always pay what an Amazon or a Microsoft mm-hmm. is going to pay you. We're going to ask you to take on a lot of things. We're going to ask you to operate in controlled chaos, right? And because of that, we need that commitment and that transparency. And just as much as you're taking care of the company, we need to take care of you. And I felt that a lot, especially when I was at Rubicon. We had to actually close the company down. Mm. And the full leadership team, it was extremely important that we take care of these humans who gave everything to try to make this work. And so we dropped everything to make sure that they found their next opportunity. They found it quickly and they found one that was going to take care of them. And I think that it's a two-way street. If we take really good care of people, they're going to give their all at the company. And honestly, I don't want to work anywhere else, right? Like, life is too short. Like, let's go a place where we enjoy the humans we're working with and we feel like we can have a family if we want that. We can work really hard and also, you know, enjoy life.
A good balance. You've said that ultimately change management is all about people. And a big part of being an effective leader at a startup is the capacity for self-reinvention. Why is this, in your mind, a necessary skill every startup leader should aspire to develop?
Yeah, I think this is absolutely paramount in a startup. I mean, every phase of the company's growth brings completely different problems, problem set. A seed series startup, you have to be super frugal. You have to be extremely scrappy, and you're kind of like all doing a whole bunch of jobs to just make sure that this thing gets off the ground. Then hopefully you have some customers, you have some revenue, maybe you get an infusion of capital and you get to level up. Whether it's an infusion of capital or a certain amount of revenue that you're bringing in or a certain time that you've been around as a company, our job as leaders is to always be ahead of where the company is going so that we can help bring the company there. So it's this kind of dichotomy of we have to be amazing at leading this team at the part that we're at, but we always have to be getting ahead so we know where to bring them. And honestly, that's to me what's so amazing about like why I picked to be in this fast-paced journey is because I love growth. Like figuring out how do I get there and how do we bring everyone there? Like we literally in all of our leadership meetings right now, because we're in hyper growth at Esper. I feel like we're building this rocket ship while we're flying it. It's like, okay, patch the things, but also we need bigger wings and we need more power. And how do we do this? But it's the absolute best time to be a leader manager, because the people that want to grow, there's room. There's all the room. There's all the ways up, around, over. You can try new things. You can take them on. I've already got to promote a woman that took on this new type of marketing we'd never done before. And she's like, I want to do that. And we're like, please. She learned it, became the expert, dove head in. And then it was like, great. Now we're promoting you because now you're going to own that. And just that ability to get to do that is so fun. Like I'm having a blast. I mean, it's probably pretty obvious, but I'm having a blast.
You do look like you're enjoying yourself, Emily. In addition to communicating a company's vision and strategy on repeat, an important part of your role is hiring the right people and fast. Why do you think you have better luck hiring people who have startup experience versus professionals with big name tech companies on their resumes?
Yeah, for the stage of company we're at, you need an extreme amount of grit and you need to be okay with not a ton of process yet and be able to operate in some chaos and changing priorities and speed. The only way we beat the big companies is by speed. We're more nimble and we can move faster. So we need the people on the team to be able to move at that pace. And for us, it's not about perfection. So actually, my CEO has this saying. Let's see if I could get it right. He said, if you're not breaking things, you're not moving fast enough, but don't break things. So what does that mean, right? It's like, if we're not breaking things, we're not pushing the envelope enough, right? But also we need to have a high level of trust of our customers. So if we break it, we got to fix it real fast. And I love that because it's this culture of like, you're not getting in trouble if you break something. If you break it twice, yeah, that's a problem. But we want you to be pushing the envelope. We want you to be trying new things. And then like culture of transparency of like, okay, hey, this didn't go as planned. So I got to roll this back and I actually need help. Great. Here, let's do it. But keep trying. Cause that's how we're going to be able to move as fast as we need to be and grow as fast as we can.
One might think that because of the addictive and fast-paced nature of working in startups, you might be someone who never suffers from change resistance. But in fact, you have and do. Just like all of us from time to time, what's your own go-to tactic to surface and combat your resistance?
Yeah. honestly, my husband is the best mirror. He is the one that can call it out and see it like nobody else if I'm not modifying or if I'm kind of holding the line on something. He actually is the one in college where he questioned every single one of my beliefs, and it really frustrated me. And he challenged me to really examine, is this what you think, or is this something you've been told and you've made yours without really examining it? Mm-hmm. And he constantly challenges me, like, what's your point of view on this? Not just what you've heard. And I try to bring that to work as well. Like, what is the point of view? I never have enough information. I love having all the information, but you never do. So it's out of these data points, what's the point of view? You can change it later if you get it wrong, but how do you make a decision so that we're not stuck somewhere?
I love it that you were describing your husband as being sort of like your reality check or your mirror. That's a great role to have someone do that in your life, Emily. In this episode, we talked to Emily Carrion, career startup executive and current VP of marketing at Esper. Emily, thank you so much for being here and sharing your change journey with us.
Thanks, Molly.
Follow us on Instagram at Angel Change Management and on Twitter at Angel322 for a little extra change content to chew on right in your feed. Looking for even more change? Sign up for our free Week to Change email course at week2change.com. That's weekto change.com. This is Molly Angel signing off. Thanks for listening. Until next time, just remember, it doesn't matter if you want to go by wagon train or rocket ship, I can help you with change.